What comes to your mind if I say pain is a product of predictive coding? I had Aaron Brunel, who's a doctor of physical therapy, on the podcast, and it was amazing. And I love people that are in this category of mind-body physical therapists. I think that they are some of the most fascinating to talk about because they enter education as a physical practitioner of pain, and oftentimes they are converted partway through. But Aaron went into school as somebody who was already in the mind-body field and wanted to bring a little bit more cachet to her title. And so I'm excited for you to hear from her. Let's get into it. Welcome back to the show. All right, I got a new patron on the podcast, Leslie. Thank you for joining up. It's always exciting when I get a new patron of the podcast. If you're interested in supporting the show, throw a few bucks in the tip jar. Go to patreon.com/themindandfitnesspodcast. There are 21 of you lovely souls that are continuing to help the show out. Keep it on the air for free. Every single week, all the time, here for you. Leslie, Justin, Mary, Teresa, Albert, Jeff, Julie, Deborah, Elise, Dominic, John, Jason, Irina, Tony, Michael, Christina, Julie, Brian, Sarah, Arnie, and Barb. Thank you all so much for supporting this podcast every week, month, and year. Hopefully you're not hearing a lot of rustling around me because it is a very rare, what is the temperature, 85 degrees in Seattle right now. It's May the 28th as I record this. You're hearing this on May the 29th. Unorthodox. We don't usually get days like this, but I'm headed to the Mariners game here in just a little bit. They beat the Nationals 9-1 yesterday, and so let's hope for a better game or an even better game tonight. George Kirby is on the hill. But yeah, so I jumping into the topic. I got in touch with the Alchemy Physio on Instagram. Check the show notes and you'll get the links to all of her socials. But from Tucson, Arizona, Aaron Brunel, this was great. We talked about pain reprocessing therapy. We talked about somatic tracking. We talked about attunement. And pain is a product of predictive coding, I thought was the perfect title for tonight and what it is that she was talking about. So without further ado, here is Dr. Brunel and I chatting it up. Welcome back to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I'm your host, Eddie Lindenstein. It's been a minute since I've had a PT on the line, and if this isn't the first, it's certainly the second or maybe the third female PT in the mind-body space. There's quite a few males that I've interviewed in this space, but I'm so happy that you're here, Dr. Aaron Brunel from Alchemy Physio in Tucson, Arizona. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. I got introduced to you by a past interview that I did, and a listener, Andrew, had said, "Hey, you should really reach out to her. You know, she's pretty smart. You should talk to her." So, big expectations for you in this interview. I told you a couple of minutes ago that the main thing that I'm gonna, or at least the first thing I'm gonna ask is, "Hey, there's this, maybe not two divergent lines of thought, but there's like mind body space and like." You know, a lot of chronic pain and everlasting issues and things like that are really a derivative of things that are going on in your mind and your brain, things like that. And then there's like physical medicine PTs, which seems very counterintuitive to that. You're at the intersection. How did you get there?
Yeah, I think my path is a little bit different than others, wherein I entered PT school with the desire to work in this realm, even though I really didn't know like if this realm even existed. So throughout my 20s, you know, I had already gone to undergrad for kinesiology and religious studies with no real plan. Those weren't intended to be related.
Yeah.
But I had a really strong yoga practice. And like this one day in my mid-20s, I was laying there in Shavasana and I had this experience of just complete like aligned embodiment. It felt like all of my cells were resonating like coherently. I don't know how else to describe it. It was like a very singular experience. But as soon as I had the experience, my first thought was, surely this is an experience that people who are hurting, who are in pain, who are experiencing illness are missing.
Yeah.
And I want to figure out how to bring this to them. And because I'm a bit of an overachiever, I was like, I should get a doctorate in physical therapy so that I have a credible scientific background or foundation from which I can share this work.
Yeah.
And so that's what propelled me into becoming a physio. And, you know, throughout PT school, I was like sitting there like waiting. I was like, when are they going to talk about like the role of like the mind and beliefs and how this influences people's perception of pain and their bodies? And they never addressed it. Yeah. So, you know, I finished my didactic work and I loved it because I still love like science and I love physical medicine. And I love, you know, just physical therapy outside of the mind body realm, I think is a fascinating, powerful profession because we're really helping people access their body's own innate healing mechanisms, which is stands apart from all other aspects of healthcare, right? That's all about doing something to the body.
Yeah.
But once I finished my schooling, I started kind of delving into and connecting with other PTs kind of in the mind body space, doing my own reading and kind of integrating my own knowledge and creating my own treatment approaches. And it just kind of evolved from there.
How many years separated, like you're done with your undergrad and then you go to get your doctorate? How many, like, what's the gap? What's the, they call it a skip year, right? Or is that what it's called when somebody finishes high school?
A gap year. I had more like a gap decade.
Yeah. Okay. So I have to commend you on that because there's a lot of people that I've interviewed on here that have this big interest in it, myself included, where like mid to or like late 2017, early 2018, you could find me kind of nightly looking at like PT schools, like, oh, I want to do the Aaron Brunel track before I knew who you were. And then it's like, that's a lot of years and that's a lot of money and that's a lot of this. And then there's a lot of people that I've interviewed on this show that same kind of similar thing where like they don't do the next thing. So kudos to you, first of all. I know you had said like you were kind of waiting for them to talk about the brain or something in this. And it just literally never came up. Was there anything even adjacent to that, that is sort of loosely, was there talk about a ramped up nervous system? Was there anything even adjacent that you learned about formally in school that you could even loosely relate to this world that you were already aware of before you got there?
Not formally in school, but I had the good fortune of having a clinical instructor during my third year of PT school who told me about Greg Lehman. He's like, Greg Lehman is coming to town and he's doing a continuing education course on reconciling pain science with biomechanics. He's like, you should really take it.
Yeah.
And I went there and I think that really set the tone for my practice moving forward, you know, and I found it really kind of encouraging, you know, because it kind of debunks a lot of the things that you learn as a PT, you know, that we need to know all these different special tests and we need to zero in on this particular tissue that's causing the symptoms. And when I, you know, spent that weekend with Greg Lehman, I was like, oh, actually maybe that stuff doesn't matter as much as we thought it did. Sure. And it's more about how can we start to expose the person to a movement in a way that doesn't trigger that, you know, that prediction model of pain. And so I ended up also doing my kind of like my final project thesis on Peter Sullivan's cognitive functional therapy, which is similar to Greg Lehman's, you know, work too. And so that kind of set the tone, but it wasn't in my didactic material at all. I kind of started to shift that way on my own.
I want to go back a second because I want you to expand a little bit. There was something you said a moment ago. How can we, and I'm paraphrasing, so correct me if I'm wrong. How can we expose this person to doing a movement that they basically are fearing is kind of what I think you were getting at. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah. So I think, you know, there's a couple different considerations here. So one is, you know, pain as a product of predictive coding, right? And so this happens subconsciously even. Our brain has started to associate pain with a certain movement or a certain chair, or a certain activity. And so our brain's like, hey, to be extra efficient, I'm just going to create pain for you because I know that we always have pain when we do this thing. And so your brain creates that association and just creates pain regardless of whether or not there's actually nociceptive input or a threat to the body. And then we have the cognitive level of that too, where we have this belief that like every time I bend over and tie my shoe, for example, I experience pain. So both Greg Lehman and Peter Sullivan started to play with this a little bit and say like, okay, well, what if I can get that their body into that same shape or that same movement, but in a slightly different position, right? So for example, if the person's accustomed to experiencing pain standing and bending forward, but we have them sit and bend forward, right? Or we have them lying on their back and then bringing their knees or legs up towards their torso. We're creating the same shape with the body.
Yeah.
Right. But it's kind of circumventing that predictive coding and that conscious anticipation to where we can start to kind of decouple that body position or movement from the creation of pain.
Is there, I mean, at this point, how long have you been practicing?
So I've been a PT for 8 years now, and I've been working solely in the mind-body space for 3.
Okay, so you might have just answered my question. I was going to ask, how many people are still coming to you where they have no working knowledge of mind, body, anything? It's just my foot's been hurting for a long time, or my back's been hurting for a long time. Or, I mean, maybe we could delve into the round of like, athletic injuries or car accidents or something. Do you ever get anybody anymore that they have no knowledge of that stuff? They just have pain and that's what it is. And then you're going and doing the whole education thing along the way, like you're starting completely from scratch. Does that still even happen with where you are in your career?
Not when they come to see me at my practice. They already kind of know what they're signing up for, but occasionally I do help out colleagues in what I call like their trad PT clinics, short for traditional PT.
Yeah.
And then I'll get some of those clients, right, who have never been exposed to this new understanding of pain.
So it's more like you're training the trainer, or you're teaching the PT about it. And it sounds like PT's coming to you. Hey, I have this client. They have this issue. Can you help me explain it to them in a way that will make sense? Is it kind of more that?
Yeah. And, you know, I think like my focus there is how can I help the PT refine their understanding so that they can provide clear messaging?
Yeah. What do you tend to, so if you chatted with a typical PT, probably isn't the right term, but like if you just went to your regular run-of-the-mill PT office and you were tasked with, hey, like I'm the CFO of this company and I have 10, I super buy into this stuff and I'm way into it. And I have 10 PTs that work at my PT company, and I'm going to have Erin come in and she's going to teach you all about mind. But where do you start? How do you teach if people are super ingrained in physical medicine? Like, where do you start as a, you know, instructor, even though I know you're not an instructor, but if you were to be one right now, how would you go?
I actually have taught a course.
Okay. Even better.
A course to other professionals last month.
Nice. Good for you.
I'm entering that realm too.
Yeah.
So foundationally, I like to introduce this, you know, this idea to both like colleagues and clients that this is very much, it's just science. Like, this is just how pain works.
Yeah.
I'm not out here trying to convince you of anything. There's nothing that you really have to believe. You really just have to understand that this is how pain works, right? And so I start with some of the central tenets of pain science, as I would see them. And like, one is that pain is a product of the brain, always, whether it's, you know, an acute injury or we're experiencing something chronic, it's always an output of the brain. That it's, you know, it's real, but it's not accurate, right? And so that's where we have to really start to understand all these other variables that influence someone's experience of pain, their beliefs, their thoughts, their emotions, their general level of like nervous system dysregulation, right? And from there, then I start kind of like providing more of the science and the research that really underscores those concepts. And then from there, we get into how do I apply this to my clients on a day-to-day basis.
How does some, and I know this has got to be a sliding scale, so you can use an example of a fake patient. What is the, once somebody is, you know, informed, educated that this thing exists and that it's like, hey, this is just science. This is just how it is. What sort of daily or regular things would you then have a patient do? Very broad question. And I can,
right,
I can say,
I know. Right. You know, this is where, I mean, cause I always have like a general model for my practice and how I treat my clients and guide them, but everyone is so different. Right. And so it ends up becoming like this very individualized journey, but I am certified in pain reprocessing therapy. So that tends to be like my overarching approach. Right. And so I'll start to introduce somatic tracking or whatever else is going to help the client start to reframe their experience of pain and reconceptualize it and kind of shift their relationship to it.
I've done episodes about somatic tracking and sometimes I feel like I'm not explaining it as well as it could be. since you're trained in PRT, can you talk through somatic tracking? Because it's been the most, it's been probably the most powerful tool in my toolkit, but as a non-practitioner and just a guy with a microphone, sometimes it may not come across as well as I want it to.
Sure. So, you know, the pain equation put forth by PRT is that pain equals sensation plus fear. And so our work in PRT is to remove the fear from the sensation, and then that allows the pain to change, shift, to go away, right? And this can be tricky because a lot of times I'll have clients who are like, but I'm not afraid of the pain. I'm just like annoyed by it, you know, or it's here and I'm fine with it. It's just kind of like, I'm like, well, it's not always like a conscious fear, right? There's some part of your brain, it's almost always subconscious, that's interpreting the sensation as a potential threat. And so we use somatic tracking to help teach the brain that this sensation is actually safe. And that's where we start to help the brain decouple fear from the sensation. And that's what allows the pain to go away. So it's a kind of exposure therapy, yeah. Right?
How, when you're teaching somebody about somatic tracking, how long do you, well, I guess like set the tone. You're telling me to do somatic tracking. Explain to me how I do it as a person. Like what's the instructions for me?
Okay. Well, first I need to make sure that you feel comfortable with this understanding of your pain, mm-hmm. right? Because if people are still really clinging to this idea that like, no, the pain is biomechanical, there's definitely something wrong, they're envisioning, you know, their joint just disintegrating into dust. Yeah. Like, you know, we really have to make sure that we have a foundation of some buy-in to this new understanding of pain science, because otherwise the safety reappraisal component of somatic tracking just doesn't have any footing, yeah. Right? Yeah, if we were just to practice some somatic tracking here, assuming you're my client and I know that you have kind of a good foundation, you have good evidence that your pain is neuroplastic, I'd say, okay, so we're just going to start to just bring some awareness to your breath. And we're going to establish some connection to your breath. And your breath is just going to be an anchor here. And then keeping one eye on your breath, we're just going to start to bring some attention to the sensation in your body. We're just noticing that lightly. And here we're doing just some mindfulness, right? Just starting to notice the sensation. We have the breath as an anchor of safety. And we just have this element of a kind of like lightness and curiosity, right? So we're not approaching the pain as something that we need to analyze or fight against or make it go away. We're just kind of noticing. And as we're noticing it, you know, we're bringing in that safety reappraisal. We're remembering that everything we've learned now about pain, our new understanding that like the sensation is just here. And I know that there's nothing wrong with my body. I know I'm okay. And so we can just kind of observe the sensation. This is kind of like a phenomenon of the brain, right? We're just allowing it and noticing it. And then I have to, you know, bring in some jokes. I have to keep it light. So depending on what analogy I'm using, you know, I might say like, and I am just like the friendly meerkat. The friendly talking meerkat, you know, I think that's borrowing from something Alan Gordon said. I forgot what animal he was, yeah. But he was like a talking animal, right? So we bring in all of these elements that really start to help decouple fear from that sensation on both a conscious and subconscious level. And I think that's, you know, the subconscious and dealing with the subconscious effectively is really where our work lies. And we can have this tendency to focus so much on the cognition that we never really integrate this understanding into our lived experience. And I think that that's where sometimes this work isn't successful with people, because yeah. We just stay so much in the cognition and we don't get to integration point.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Is your, do you keep an office in Tucson?
I do have a treatment space. Yes.
Is it, so I imagine, you know, when I walk into any PT, like my daughter had reconstructive elbow surgery a couple of years ago, and like you go into the PT facility and, you know, there's foam rollers and there's Bisu balls or whatever those things are called, the big, you know, the big giant.
Bosu.
Okay. There's all that stuff. I get the sense that I walk into yours, none of that stuff exists. Am I wrong?
I do have a foam roller.
Okay.
I don't use it often. I can't remember the last time I used it, but I do have one.
Okay.
I think it's more for me.
Yeah. Talk to me about, because there certainly are people that it could be post-injury or maybe even chronic that go into a PT place and they work with them for, you know, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks, whatever, and they do have an improvement in symptoms on whatever the issue is. Tell me what's going on.
Ooh, that's a good question. Yeah. I like that.
Loaded, yeah. It's very loaded, but I'm curious from somebody that's trained in the space, what is going on?
Yeah. So, I mean, I really think that it's the same mechanisms at play. It just, everything exists on a spectrum, right? And so, for example, if it's someone with like a more acute injury, like what we might classify as secondary pain, like pain arising secondary to something actually happening to the tissues in the body. And then on the other end of the spectrum would be, you know, something that's like just much more primary pain, more generated by the brain. Depending on where a person falls, that kind of orients us towards different treatment interventions, right? Whether we're doing like more like traditional PT for the secondary acute pain or mind-body interventions for the primary pain. But I think the mechanism of effect is the same for the entire spectrum. Mm-hmm. In all of those instances, we are applying a stimulus to the person, to their body, to their subconscious, to their conscious mind, that is teaching the brain that that part of the body is safe, right? And so in like more traditional PT, we're teaching the brain that that part of the body is safe by loading it and moving it. And through that repetition, the brain is like, oh, okay. Yeah, actually this is feeling okay. This part of my body is safe. Okay, so I don't need to create pain as a warning signal anymore. And we have some evidence now to support that this might actually, actually is more the case, right? Because we thought that we were rehabbing tendons by loading them and making the tissue more robust and stronger, but we've done imaging on these tendons that we've rehabbed and they can look exactly the same as they did before rehab, right? But they're feeling better.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of, and my he's a buddy of mine and he knows kind of where I land on this. And actually he's like traditional, you know, traditional PT kind of guy. But also I do remember when I was going to him, when my pain just kind of started popping up and flaring up in all these different places that really had, there was no reason for them. And he would make recommendations to me about like journaling and breath work and stuff like that, which I didn't understand at the time because I wasn't ready. But I took my daughter to see him for her post-surgical rehab. The biggest issue that she was having was not pain, but it was that I'm wearing a jacket, so you can't really see. But, her arm was just like kind of stuck. Like she couldn't straighten it all the way. And at first the, you know, heavily rooted Western medical model part of me, was like, oh, like Dr. Schnebly, the surgeon screwed something up and he did the anchors and the bolts and all that, whatever he did in there. He didn't make sure that the arm was straight before he secured it all down. But then David would talk to me and he would be like, it's really just Zoe being able to trust that her arm is safe when it is fully extended. Because you could, if sometimes I would even like grab her hand and I would just stare at her eyes as like a distraction. And I would just keep pulling. And eventually she would let it go and it would fully straighten. But if you asked her to do any task, she could not straighten that arm. And so it was a lot of like, I don't even know how to describe it, distraction work, meaning she'd be say like in like a push-up plank position and she has to say reach with one arm to maybe like press a colored button or something. And then once she was released from PT, her arm wasn't fully straight yet. But some of the things that I did was like, we're going to do kettlebell deadlifts and we're going to progressively load the weight and get it to a point where the weight is so heavy that you have no choice but to release and make your arm straight. So this little girl who weighs 55 or 60 pounds, she's doing kettlebell deadlifts with a 53 pound bell because there's no other way other than to have fully straight arms. And, you know, we would do that 2-3 times a week. And then over the course of a month or a couple of months or whatever, it was fully straight and there were no residual issues and all that. But that's what you're talking about, right? Like being able to just trust the elbow to straighten.
Yeah, but it's a subconscious trust, right? Like the brain subconsciously has to trust it because we can cognitively trust it till the cows come home. But until the brain actually believes that it's safe for that arm to be completely straight, it's not going to allow it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so let's say that you are back at a traditional PT place. Somebody comes to you and they said, what's a good example? they were doing snatches or deadlifts or something in their garage 3 days ago, and suddenly it felt like my back just went out. What do you do as a practitioner? How do you start?
So I always start with a thorough physical exam, which is one reason I appreciate being a PT in mm-hmm. this realm, because I can offer that to my clients before we delve into the mind-body stuff. And I think it's super valuable for them, right? That kind of vote of confidence, like, oh, actually nothing is wrong with my body.
Yeah.
Like, we cleared that. And so once we clear that, then we can kind of move into a discussion about pain. And then that's where we might, you know, one of the ideas that I find really powerful to share with people is that oftentimes our brain creates pain well before we're at risk of actual tissue damage,
yeah.
right? It creates it, you know, in anticipation. It's more of a warning signal, like, hey, I'm concerned that if you keep doing this or you do more of it, you know, a greater load, that you might sustain some tissue damage, right? And so that can be really reassuring to people too. And so, like, as they start to kind of understand that the pain signaling doesn't necessarily mean that something is wrong, we clear them with a physical exam, then it's a matter of how do I access, start to regain some safety in this movement? And that's where we might bring in some of, you know, Greg Lehman's and Peter Sullivan's work. Like, how can I start to get my body into this position again, but without fear, right?
Yep.
So I know, like, Charlie Merrill has talked about, you know, a person with knee pain, and then they realized, like, nothing was wrong with the knee. And so his prescription was, like, just start doing a bunch of air squats throughout the day, right? Because that wasn't painful. And mm-hmm. that exposure starts to teach the brain that, hey, this movement is safe, this joint is safe, and that gets them back to where they need to go. So on paper, it's a pretty simple treatment approach, I think. You know, it's not overly complicated. Where it gets complicated is that, you know, we're people.
Yeah.
And we're complex. So
what's your opinion on, cause Sarno and Schubiner, I'm assuming, did Alan Gordon teach your PRT, I'm guessing, or mm-hmm. Have you had any interactions with Dr. Schubiner before?
I haven't.
Okay. You know who he is though?
I do.
Okay. So his book versus, like, Sarno's book, especially Sarno's early books, Sarno was talking about, like, balls to the wall, full activity, 100%, full speed, like, do all that as fast as possible. Schubiner's tone is far more in graded exposure. What is your, where does Dr. Brunel, where do you land?
Yeah. So my favorite word is attunement, right? And so attunement as in really connecting to your body and your felt sense, your nervous system, right? And, like, what feels safe to you,
yeah.
right? Because I think if we are kind of doing, like, that balls to the wall, like, return to movement, like, that can sometimes be perceived as a threat.
Yeah.
By our brain, by our nervous system, right? And that's just going to perpetuate pain cycles, or has a strong tendency to perpetuate pain cycles. And so graded exposure, I think, is more aligned with attunement, but, like, it really varies, right? I don't think we need to act like we're, like, these super delicate mm-hmm. beings either. So being a little bit more aggressive could be really aligned for one person. And then having a more graded approach could be more aligned for another person.
Yeah.
But what I try to do is really help people start to learn how to attune to themselves and how their body communicates perception of danger, and work with that, like, kind of growth edge in their return to activity.
Yeah. Okay. This is sort of like a heavy shifting gears. This is more because I have you at my disposal. And so I'm always, people that are in the physical medicine realm, I just find so fascinating, because you see, or in your career have seen people of all shapes, sizes, fitness levels, all that kind of stuff. I'm 39. I'm going to be 40 next year. And my mother in particular, but even just other people that I know that are of similar age, they're slowing down. At this point in time, I feel physically better as an athlete than I ever have, better than I did at 20, 25, 30, whatever. And I've been told over the years, especially in the last 5 or 6 years, hey, like, that thing's slowing down. You got to be careful. You're getting it. But I don't feel any sense of slowing down. What is your, I guess, like, what's your overall take on, I don't even know how I can even frame that into a question. What's your overall take on, like, the intersection of, say, like, age and taking it easy or backing off, or that, you know what, that, like, does that make sense? Getting your perspective on that. I'm curious. And I hope you don't tell me to slow down, because I'm literally looking
definitely not.
I'm like, hey, like, I legit might do a sprint marathon this year or next year, and I would, or not a sprint marathon, a sprint triathlon. And I've never even considered doing something like that. But I, you know, I follow these, follow Andy Blaze on TikTok, and he's doing the, what is it called? The Kokomo or the Coca something. It's like a 250-mile race through Arizona. So I'm like watching people.
Yeah.
I'm following people that are doing this, and I'm like, oh, maybe I want to do that. So yeah, talk about that.
Yeah. So I will start by acknowledging that obviously, like, I haven't had that lived experience of being that age. So a lot of this is conjecture. I don't really want to like make too many assumptions about what it's like to enter those decades of life. And maybe, you know, when you are attuned to your body, maybe there is some sense of slowing down that feels aligned. That being said, when I was in PT school, this article came out about, you know, I think it was like the top five ways like PTs like really weren't operating at the top of their license. And one of the things on that list was that we were underloading older adults. And so I read that and I was like, well, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Like from the get-go, right, I've been the PT that, you know, I'll be treating people in their 70s and 80s and they look at me and they're like, do you know how old I am and what you're asking me to do? And I was like, yeah, I don't care. You're alive. Like, yeah, as long as you're alive, your body is adapting, right? And I think, you know, we have so much messaging in our culture around aging, just like we have so much messaging in our culture around pain. And it becomes so internalized that we don't even realize that it's forming our experience and forming our perception of reality. And it's being manifested in our bodies, right?
Yeah.
So I think we have a huge opportunity, both in the realms of aging and in pain, to start to realize like where we've internalized all this messaging and where we really can exercise our free will and start to shift our perception and therefore our experience of these phenomena.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. That's good perspective. I told you I was only going to keep it to 30. Do you got a few more minutes?
Yeah, we can go a little bit longer.
Okay, cool. These tend to go very quickly. You're easy to talk to, so that's good. Okay, so talk about your practice now, because you know I want to promote, right? Like Aaron Brunel Alchemy Physio. And did I pronounce that correctly? Alchemy, right? Okay.
Yes.
It looks
yes.
like Alchemy, and then we're a Taylor Swift house, and she says Alchemy in one of her songs, and so you know I'm kind of the way she it sounds
oh,
the way she's pronouncing it.
I had no
it.
Idea.
We're big Swifties in this home.
Right on.
How do people typically find you? And what does a typical person come to you and say once they do find you? What are they looking for?
Yeah, so I have some local providers who refer to me, like a naturopath. I have some pelvic floor physical therapists that refer to me. Other people find me like through the PRT directory. Some people find me through word of mouth. And generally, you know, I'm like one of their last stops.
Yeah.
They've tried everything else and nothing's really working. And thankfully, you know, in my outreach in my community in Tucson, I've been able to kind of inform some other providers about what I do. And so they're able to kind of identify their clients that would benefit from my work. And so, you know, people come to me with like somewhat of an understanding of what I do, but very curious to learn more.
Yeah.
And my practice is unique in that I don't just do mind body physical therapy, but I'm also trained in a modality called depth hypnosis, which is a really interesting blend of, you know, transpersonal psychology and applied shamanism and energy medicine and Buddhism. And so I brought that in because I found that I was kind of hitting a wall with some folks where they really wanted to change and like implement this knowledge. And it just seemed like they were kind of hitting these blocks. And so I was like, well, hypnosis might be an interesting thing to bring in. And so I do integrate that into my treatment sessions for some clients when it feels like the right match, to really help them start to shift their internalized sense of like whether or not they're safe.
Excellent. Do you have a website? Or socials or something like that? Where can people find
you? Yeah, my website is just alchemyphysio.com. It's alchemyphysio.
Excellent.
And alchemy_physio on Instagram.
I will put that stuff in the show notes. Don't hang up yet, but we'll say goodbye now for the purpose of the podcast. But thank you for being here. And if you're interested in talking more to Dr. Brunel, check out the notes section.
Thank you.